Welcome and thank you for tuning into the Joy Tutor Podcast. I am your host, Joanna Williams. Together, we will unpack, learn, teach, and celebrate the journey of emerging entrepreneurs and courageous trailblazers. Let's dig in.
Mr. Wesley, thank you for joining.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It is such a pleasure to have you, love. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Wesley Jean Simon. I don't like the titles, but some people in the newspaper said I'm the executive chef, owner, entrepreneur, restaurateur now. I'm the guy that's trying to feed the community, basically.
You're doing big things. I'm definitely proud of you and inspired by you, which is the reason why you are here, because I definitely wanted to share your journey, your wisdom, and your light while promoting your business. So please tell us about yourself. How did it all start?
Oh my God, it started in a bus on my way to work at Burger King at 16. So I used to travel an hour and a half to get to work, about 2 hours to get back home. I was living in Eastonge at that time, went to Eastonge High School. I had to travel to Lyndhurst, New Jersey. I take a bus downtown Newark, take another bus all the way up to Lyndhurst. And at that time, that was my first cooking job at a Burger King. Met some friends. One of my great friends actually was at the restaurant yesterday since high school, too. I met in that job. So we become great friends. And he's doing well. I'm doing well. And we just trade stories all the time. Dude, do you remember this? And on that part, first thing that happened to me at Burger King restaurant, within 6 months, I become a supervisor at 16.
Okay.
So leadership was already built in.
Yeah.
And that's something you cannot, like, it's in you. I think everybody can be a leader in a certain field. But mine shined very bright early. You know, I remember in Haiti, and I was in, like, drill team, like, you know, working. And I got promoted to sergeant. I got promoted fast. Like, everything I do, I usually get promoted fast. And that built the character of leadership that I have in the tribe for opening the business. When I decided to do something, nobody gonna stop me. I don't care if it is my own mom and dad, like they live their life. It's my turn to start living the life that I want best for me. I'm against conventional life wisdom. And that's one thing I pride myself on, and I don't even share with people until today. I don't see life supposed to be buy a house, have 2 kids, this, that, whatever. There's a script.
Yeah.
Do what makes you happy. I love cooking. And I know I was good at it, but I didn't go to school for cooking. I got a degree in computer network. And I kept quitting the computer network job. I fall asleep in the office. And I like being on my feet. I like doing things with my hands. I can define it. Now it's therapeutic. I'm in the office. I'm stressing more than when I was in the kitchen. And I find out, like, every time I get out of work, I feel like a weight lifting off my shoulder. But I don't feel, I don't understand how I was spending 8 hours in a place and I'm pissed. So that was one of my biggest issues working in an office and knowing that I wasn't in my field. And on the weekends, I'll invite my boys over, friends over, like whatever. We have big dinner. I know we used to have a tradition back in Jersey when I become a kitchen manager for Tuesday on Fridays in West Orange. We had a tradition every Thanksgiving. Everybody would have Thanksgiving dinner with their friends and their family, whatever. Instead of going to a bar, I'll cook Thanksgiving dinner, and we have a party until 4 in the morning at my house, and everybody will bring something. The guys would start dropping groceries at my house early, then go home and have dinner with their family, then come back and finish the party and have my food. So
that sounds like a dope after party.
Yeah, it was. And every Thanksgiving, people look forward. And you have guys like dropping up. One time I had 7 turkeys in the house. I'm like, yo, dude, I'm not cooking 7 turkeys. It was like, no, I have this extra turkey. You got to do a different turkey. You got to do a different one. You got to do pieces of turkey. You got to do a whole turkey in the oven. I'm like, yo, dude, stop. By the end of the night, everything's already cooked. So, and they all keep saying, yo, dude, you got to cook. I started with that story with everybody. Like, you got somebody in their family that's a great cook, great chef. That's why you see those mom and pops restaurants. And if somebody would be like, yo, you should open a restaurant. Because they keep eating your food. You should open a restaurant. You should open a restaurant. And so many people kept saying it. And you finally got some tax money. And that one hole in the wall, you'd be like, yo, how much is it? $2,000? Okay, I got $10,000 from the tax. I could pay 3 months down. That's $6,000. So I need some equipment. This just got a little bit of equipment. How do I make this work? That's how I know most of the Haitian restaurants started. Greek mom in the back, killing it. And service is like garbage because they have no idea what service is supposed to be like. But people would just stand in line because that food is a killer. It's one of those stories my boys kept telling me. But good thing I had background in cooking. I always have a chef job. And that's always been my happy place. Always go back to it. Always go back to it. When I realized that you're good at it, stop fronting. You get paid good dollar doing this. So start focusing on things. Like, so when I moved to New York, I worked for Fridays. I worked for Uptown Brasserie in the JFK Airport area, Terminal 4. I was the executive chef for Uptown Brasserie, which is a concept by Marcus Simpson. And I used to watch his shows and everything. Never met him once. Been to Red Room a couple of times in that kitchen training. Because I think when you're a chef in a certain level, you can't be in place at one time. I'm looking at his operation, and all this started building up in my head. And I'm going. And I left the executive chef's job, got a job with Hard Rock Cafe, executive sous chef. Now, I'm not worried about cooking no more. I'm testing my menu now on my employees for 3.5 years. We got to do employee meals. So I'm timing. If I put 6 trays of chicken out, 4 trays of rice, and we're feeding 600 employees, and I'm telling myself how fast they're going to eat all this food, how much they really like this food. So I timed them. Like 20 minutes, everybody in the whole building, you could hear even on the walkie-talkie, yo, Wesley cooked today. Because every chef, like on shift, got to cook the employee meal for nighttime. And you hear like, yo, Wesley cooked, oh, I'm coming down. Like from retails, all the way to the front, like a whole black radius, like driving down with to-go boxes and 20 minutes, like, all the food is gone. I'm like, okay, I keep timing them. I put a new menu out. I keep timing them. I put a new item out. I keep timing them. So I'm like, okay, my menu is good. I got 50% of my menu. So when I decided to open my restaurant, I didn't worry about my menu. I already tested my menu to 600 people already.
That's so smart.
Yeah. It was so easy to open, to do the menu. Building a menu is the easiest part for me in opening a restaurant. Because
yeah.
I have the background in restaurant. I have my background in managing. When I decided to open the restaurant, something crazy happened. And I've been thinking about it. But the straw that broke the camel back really kills me when it happened. And it went back to like basically race. When I decided to open the restaurant. Like I wanted to do a restaurant. I had my menu tested, and I'm testing my menu. I'm being a good boy in the place. And what really started pissing me off is just that the company will hire guys from Wisconsin, like guys from the Midwest. They're coming with less experience, but the guys in the kitchen that worked under me for years or been in the company for 15, 20 years, those guys are masters in the kitchen. They know the business inside out. They know how to put everything out. If you ran out of something, give them 3 minutes. They got it. And they're promoting those white boys from the Midwest, no experience, coming in and telling those guys what to do. And they can see bluntly in their face. It's like being a doctor. You know who's well experienced or not. And you're looking at this young doctor walking in and telling you how to do surgery. And you're like, where are you coming from? And I'm actually in those guys' faces. They're pissed all the time. And I went in the mid office and I sat down with them. They're looking for sous chefs and supervisors. I'm like, yo, I want the guys in the kitchen. I was like, this guy's been here 15 years with you. You got another guy who got a 20 years Rolex watch. So if you give him 20 years, you give him a Rolex watch. He's not good enough to supervise this kitchen that he's been in all his life, basically. All his adult nights. We got this guy coming in. He got well experienced. I said, no, you're working with a monster. You're doing a restaurant that can do $210,000 a day. That's unheard of. You cannot bring somebody on the outside coming and guessing and training in your place while you try to put this money out. It's going to affect the flow. It's going to affect the money. It's going to affect everything. I try to plead the case. You know how it is. You plead your case. So they decided not to do it. So I told them jokingly, you know, when I quit, you're going to have to promote those guys because you're going to be going to all those new guys so fast to replace me. You will have to quit, replace these guys when I quit. And they start laughing, like, oh, what's he stopping, man? You look at me, executive chef. I'm like, yeah, but the executive chef is not quitting. He doesn't do shit. A white guy. Yeah. Damn, they're not pushing this $100,000 job. Come on. And he's in his 50s. Come on, ain't nobody going anywhere. Stop playing with me, okay? I don't play like that. I kept working. And another day, it was a review. That was that day. I had to do my yearly review. Walk in the office, sat down, we discussed my career. They give me the lie again about the executive chef crap, whatever. When they try to get bring in the more white boys, the better shifts they're getting it, the better hours they're getting it. But I truly understand what I can do, so they don't want to disturb the flow. So they keep me on my shifts so I can run the place. I'm like an overseer. They got me giving the other Negroes in place.
Yeah.
Not the hardship at the most difficult time of the night. I understand my part, but they don't mess with me. They know my style. And truthfully, they never really got on me because they know my experience. They know what I can do. One thing I know about racist white folks sometimes, they know their role. They respect your expertise, even though you're a black guy. They respect that because they know you can execute, so they'll mess with you for that. So understandable. That's the way of the world, this world, American world.
Yeah.
I'm cool with it. And I sat down and review, a third year review, and here's my GM sitting across the desk from me. I'm from the hood. I grew up in East Orange. I spent some time in Brooklyn now. I'm well seasoned as a Brooklynite. I've been in New York for 15 years now, so that makes me a New Yorker now, I think.
Hey, down.
And I'm sitting across the street from, I'm in the room from this guy, and it's weird. He's talking to me. He's grinding his teeth. He cooked out of his freaking head. And I'm like, okay. He's going, selling me something he can't deliver, selling me a dream, selling me this, selling me that, and I'm studying this. And it hits me. I said, so this is the guy that my future, my life, my future kids, my future wife. When my dad and my mom died, I got to bury. This is the guy that's going to make this decision for me.
Right.
Cooked out of his mind. That can promote me or fire me, do anything. And he's not even going here. Sitting across from me.
He was
cracking. Cracking.
Wow.
Across the room. And I'm like, this is the life that, this is the guy that can make the decision and bring the making.
Yeah.
I got out of the office and I leaned against the wall in the hallway with my head back. And I closed my eyes thinking. One of the managers of the server walked by and said, "Wes, you okay?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm done with this shit."
Yeah.
And that's the moment I was like, "I'm done."
I said, "What is that defining moment, right? There's always a moment."
Yeah. And I'm like, "I'm done with this."
Yeah.
I'm really done with this. This man cannot make decisions about my life. You cannot trust this man to dictate my future as a black man.
That's right. To put food on your table.
Yeah.
And keep the
This is the man that said, yo, you get promoted, or you get a raise, or you don't get a raise. This is the shift you work. It could disturb your whole balance in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's not doing it on a clear mind. So I went, worked my shift, went home, got dressed, hang out with a couple of friends. We've been talking about the restaurants. I'm our business partners. We're talking, and I had to go back to work on Monday. Then I was off that weekend, Saturday, Sunday. Then I was like, you know what? I'm done. They thought I was joking. I was like, I'm really done. I'm not working for Vigro. Then they were telling me I was joking. I said, open the vodka. We drink. I'm done. We're celebrating.
When's Austin?
Yeah. We're celebrating. I'm done. But what's the good thing? Like, this will be a defining moment for me. It wasn't a defining moment. It's just that I grew up in a country that we all kings. We've been free for so long. There's no such thing as racism in our country. They just are reintroducing racism to all the struggle going in Haiti. I grew up. First time somebody was being racist to me, my friend Rich, that came to see me yesterday, he had to tell me, like, he's been racist to you, right? I was like, what is that? I never knew what is racism. I never knew what is discrimination. Because I grew up in a black country. My mayor is black. My doctor is black. My policeman is black. My president is black. My mom is black. And I'm running around. My best friend is black. And that's around. My first crush was black. And I'm like, okay. Now I'm literally feeling, okay, we need to fix that country. And I'm like, no. Because growing up, your biggest issue is not race. It's not, I see you, I don't like you. That's why you cannot progress. You cannot make no progress. You cannot be somebody you're supposed to be. It's not the color of your skin. It's just that you're freaking dumbass, or you don't want to work, you're lazy. That's why you're not where you want to be. Like, there's no other thing that's stopping you, bro. Not especially not being black. Get up and do your thing. That's the great country I grew up in. And I remember before they overthrew Papa Doc, Baby Doc, my country was at a 98% GDP and employment rate. That's higher than the U.S. Our dollar was dollar for dollar. A U.S. dollar, Haitian dollar. I grew up in that area.
Yeah.
So whatever they're selling on TV right now, I don't know it.
That's good that you say that, because oftentimes what people see on TV is all they know and what they assume. So it's, I appreciate you sharing the truth from firsthand experience and having lived it.
Yeah, I can tell people stories from the first coup when the country started to get a tumble. I remember a year after the first coup in 86, 87, we had our first blackout. Everybody walk out the house and be like, it's like a bomb hit the country. We never had a blackout. Nobody knew about blackout. Now they're constantly living in blackouts. I have the 24-year-old that works for me. I was like, yo, you go up in Haiti, do you ever seen light? 24/7 white? She was like, what, light? No, that's no such thing. We never understand what running water is. We always have a bucket or somebody delivering water to our house. I'm like, wow. But I used to open my faucet just like you in America. Lights 24/7. I remember watching 86 World Cup on my call of TV in Haiti. I didn't have the biggest house in the world, but
you were comfortable.
I was comfortable. I didn't want much. There was food on the fridge.
Yeah.
Living in a hot island country, if you got a fridge, you're doing well. Back in the 80s, but a fridge is doing well.
Having that experience living in Haiti during that time as a young man, as a young child, and now transitioning and living here in the U.S., as a businessman, how has that shaped who you are and your mission and your intention with your business?
Great question. The way shaped who I am, none of this impressed me. People were like, you're skyscraper. Oh my God. I'm like, dude, just another building.
Yeah.
I'm not here to watch buildings. And I always got to say it now. I came to America with a suitcase full of clothes. I'm living in America with a suitcase full of money. That's the goal for America. I'm not playing. I'm not staying here. I don't care what that. All they have to do is put me out of the job to make me stay in this country. I'm going to make money. If Haiti's not ready for me to move when I'm getting old, I'll go to Jamaica. I'll go to any island. I can speak the language, a black island, and live the rest of my life. I need heat. I need sun. I need farm to table, sea to table food to live the rest of my life. I'm not going to be doing all this GMO crap for the rest of my life. I'm sorry, my blood pressure already going up by tasting food every day. Stop it. Whatever you guys selling, at old age, I cannot buy it. I'll buy it now. But I'm going to put it on the shelf, on the table, counter in my house, and evaluate the situation. So I'm not impressed. I'm really not impressed. That shaped my life. That shaped me into knowing that there's a Creole saying, pay you and pay you. Like, somebody else, your house and country is not your country. You need to create your own house in your own country. I live by that.
Everything that you've shared thus far is spot on. How has you starting your business moved the needle for you to be closer to where you want to be as a black man in your community? When you look around at young men, young boys, even young women, modeling where we should be from a generational wealth perspective.
The leap of faith that I took to open this business was the most important part. My business partners, we all put, like, whatever last dollar we had. And it was crazy, like, when we opened the restaurant, how broke we were, cash out basically all my credit cards. I was like, guys, we're running out of money. We need to crack this dog.
Yeah.
But I was like, we're running out of money. We need to crack this door open so we could filter the money back in.
Yeah.
And because I was choking, I placed my food order.
Yeah.
I was like, so you guys going to do a food test? I said, if you guys want a food test, I'll give you guys a food test. But where's the menu? I was like, the menu's in my head. Don't worry about it.
I got it.
I didn't even wrote the menu. Because when I'm buying the equipment, I already got the menu in my head. Because you're buying the equipment in restaurants according to your bid.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to have extra equipment you never use, like a salamander. And you're not like grilling nothing, putting color on no meat. And you got a salamander you never use. The menu's in my head. And I'm like, I'm cracking the door. And that's how I'm joking. I literally faced the dining room one day, took some pictures, and checked the tables. If I'm fitting the table here and there, whatever, doing a floor plan. And they thought I was joking. They kept talking, having a good old time. I walked to the windows and start ripping the papers off the windows. I start ripping all the papers.
Yeah, we're open right now.
They don't even get it. Because when you have the paper out there on the window, you're in the construction.
Yeah.
Everybody in the neighborhood wondering what the hell's going on.
Absolutely.
So when that night, Sunday night, around 6 o'clock, I start ripping all the papers off the window in December, like a week before my birthday. And I ripped it. Then I turned on the lights. Then I turned around. I took some videos. I walked back, and I started pacing now. It's about to be showtime. I'm about to go on stage. It's showtime. And I'm pacing around the restaurant, and they're all looking at me. And one of them was like, Lake Ralph Gramond. Ralph looked at me and was like, you know he's fucking crazy, so don't worry about it. And I was like, but he don't have a menu. Then Ralph was like, why does he need a menu? He's the chef.
Exactly.
I'm going to be standing next to him while he builds on the menu, and I'm just going to take notes. And he was a beautiful restaurateur, man. God bless this man's soul. Died 6 months later, winning the Michelin show, like one of my best partners. He died of pancreatic cancer 6 months later. They found out late in his life. And this man, he was actually better than me. He was one of my greatest inspiration to everything I'm doing. People will be like, what inspired a dead guy? Inspired. Mm-hmm. He always said, grow. I would not get into it because he helped build a lot of restaurants in the Haitian community. He helped started a lot of businesses in the Haitian community, and he gave up. And I pulled him in. I was like, yo, Ralph, we used to chill, drink all the time. He worked at Merchant at one point. And I was like, yo, dude, we got to do something. He was like, yeah. And he was like, the only way I'm doing something, unless we grow, we're not going to open one restaurant and sit on it and act like we got something. And every time I'm about to get ready to open a new door, I'm about to get ready to crack something fresh, or I got something cooking under my hat, I light a candle for Ralph. Mm-hmm. I was like, you said it, man. I'm doing it. And I told my girl, I told my family, I told my business partners, if you can't see the vision yet, and if you don't understand what I'm doing, you need to step aside, because I will go over you. You're not allowed stepping this way. Because we created this. I created something that I know is going to be special. I'm just getting started. I'm just now understanding what I'm doing. At first, I wanted to open a restaurant. By the second one, I start getting a hang of it. When sales drop 50%, I know how to increase it now. And that's advertisement, marketing, and everything. I got a different hat on every day I'm waking up. And the third place where we crack the doors open, now I'm testing glitches. What's the issue? What's this? What's that? Within the third place, there's another business in there I haven't released yet. That's the moneymaker. Within that business, was a business, you don't have to sell one product. You could sell multiple products. You could sell the online product now. You could sell the brick and mortar product. And I told my business partners, don't step in my way. Like, I'm doing 16 hours a day. I have no problem not taking a vacation for 3.5 years. Dude, don't think I'm stupid. That's why I haven't taken a vacation. Don't think I love to work. That's why I'm not taking. No, I'm building something. When I sit down and look back, I'm going to be like, I created this.
Yes. And you can rest.
I can rest easy to a point. that my family, just like I said, when you got $1 billion, your kids can eat. Like Jay-Z's kids, that's going to be my kids. I'm going to create something.
That's generational abundance, generational wealth. Absolutely.
I hate, like, when I was growing up, that I'm worrying about the fact, oh, man, I live on my own now. I got to rent that $200. I had a basement, a room in a basement, $200. And I lost my job. I couldn't pay that $200. My sister had to send me $200 to pay that room. Then one time in that basement was a big rain day, whatever was going on, storms. And I was asleep. I went out, of course, getting drunk. You used to be, you know, not working. What else to do? People sleep middle of the night and the storm hit. And the room got flooded. I was in a bed, and that's a basement room that got flooded. I felt like I had a dream I was in a boat, and the boat was rocking. So the water was so high it lifted the mattress off the frame. When I jumped, my head fell in the water. When I jumped, I literally think now I was in the ocean. Because you know your brain associate thing.
Yes.
I can sit, I almost drowned.
My goodness.
That's being broke. That's what being broke is. And it happened again to me when I moved to New York. Twice I almost drowned and I wasn't in the ocean.
That's New York for you.
Yeah. It's just, when that happened to me, people don't even understand how my PTSD and my life changed. Silently. It changed. I'm seeing the world different. Why am I in a situation I'm always drowning? Because I'm broke. Literally drowned. Because I was broke. Living in basements, paying $200 rent in inadequate places. And I can't live like a normal person. And I'm drowning financially. I'm drowning. Because I'm broke.
Yeah.
And I start thinking, how do I get out? Talking like open restaurant, open February 2nd. What is what?
Wow.
Yeah, the pandemic hit. I'm back drowning.
How did you get out of it? One thing about being in the water, you quickly knew how to tread water. You had survival skills. I'm sure you tapped into that survival internal toolkit that you have.
But my survival kit was easy, right? It's always referred to as all panic. Because the first hour when I had to close the restaurant door, I panicked. I went to sit in the back of the restaurant, sat down. The water started coming out of my eyes. I just said, everything I have to this, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
My question was, what the hell just happened? Which was 2 weeks later, we still eat it. And I ordered food on Uber. They can fast. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm listening to this news. I went back to my survival skills from Haiti. This is not my country. Why am I sitting there listening to the rhetoric and not making it happen? I need that bag of money. I got up, called my business partner, was like, yo, I'm opening the door. What do you mean? I'm doing to goes, bro. I'm going to go there by myself. If you want to come, you can come. I'm doing to goes. Started doing to goes. Then it would get the middle of the peak of the summer. Hit fairly. It was hot. And somebody ordered to go with a box of food, with utensils. Believe me, this whole thing changed the restaurant world and the demographic, how we do business. People don't even understand it. They just had pain. Getting our comedy, like we said, days, they want this, they want that. They don't know how much of a toll it took on restaurants owners to provide all the services at home. And it's very hot. This young lady came in, ordered a burger, a Bali burger, which are herring burger with turkey and top up with herring meat. It's really good, actually. Never thought turkey and herring will pair up so well. And she sat down eating it with a soda. And she was like, do you mind if I grab a table from inside and just put it out there and sit on the side with a chair? Because I don't feel like going in the house. I've been in the house all day. And people start getting homes. Like, there's too much at home. And she was like, I'll just sit out here and just eat my burger, whatever, not next to nobody. You mind? I was like, yeah, cool. That's before they announced that you could go out and sit it. Because nobody had any clue what the hell's going on. Then while she sat out there eating, another guy came in and was like, yo, can I sit outside? Just give me a chair. I don't need anything. I ate all my life. I was like, yeah. Then I put a table, make them feel comfortable. So we opened for at 11 o'clock. My fourth, like, I already got seven tables outside. We're just sitting eating. This is my outdoor sitting story. I was doing outdoor sitting before the nails out there. Because the people in the neighborhood, they wanted somewhere they could sit and eat lunch beside the house they've been cooked up in for 2 months.
Yeah, cabin fever.
And I give them a table. Next thing, the next morning I woke up. When I came in, I already put my tables outside, man. And people see chairs and tables outside. They come in, they start sitting outside. What? Next thing you know, literally everything when I was in the restaurant already on sidewalk by next week. Now I'm saying, okay, we about to do something stupid. I love music. I call my boy Mamalino. He's an artist in the neighborhood. He played the guitar. I like playing the drum. We sat out there. He's playing the guitar. I'm playing the drums and everything. We're singing. We're bullshitting. People start standing there just so watching the performance in the neighborhood. Call a couple of other more artists. Now, we got live music every night. Not only outdoor sitting. Then they're announcing outdoor. Oh, whatever. Now we're worried about how to feed those people. Do we use our utensils? Because it's COVID. We don't want to bring it back to washing and dishes. The person not washing it, whatever. Then we get, okay, they come out with plastic forks and stuff. I was like, perfect. People sitting in boxes, two gold boxes, listening to music. Now, they didn't even come in with the social distancing yet.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The neighborhood was already sick of that COVID crap.
Yeah.
Because now, I think that was my best sales. And I didn't have a liquor license. I made the most money during COVID in outdoor city because people scared of going to other neighborhood. They're scared of going to the city. So all my people in my neighborhood eat from me. That was the best part of my COVID story. And it helped the business to a point like the community got into just through the business faster. Everybody know what is Zombie, what is the, what we stand for, the type of shit we're doing. And you can ask anybody from the mile radius about Zombie. They'll tell you what it is. Oh, that Haitian restaurant, no shit. Because one thing about me, I don't compete with people. Nobody's my competition. When you start competing with people, it's create envy, jealousy. Then you get blind. You don't see yourself. You only see that person in the mirror every time you wake up. So my biggest competition always been me. What can I do to make this restaurant better? Reading more, listening to more books, because I don't have time to really sit and read a book.
Yeah.
So while I'm in the car, I'm sneaking the Marco Solis Ferrari. Again, love that book.
Since you opened the first doors of your restaurant, February 2020, you are now three restaurants in, correct?
Yeah.
Awesome. What does the future look like for you?
The future is easy. The future, I don't want people to think like, that's being cocky. No, it's not being cocky. It's being comfortable in your own skin. Black people, we need to be comfortable in our own skin. Like when you're looking at a white boy walking down the street, he owned this country. You see him, so he's walking down the street. Like the world is his. We need to start creating that. Don't be nervous walking down the streets like to another black man. Greet them. Start creating your own E in your mind. So when I said the future is easy, I think people probably more about problem than creating a business. It's not understanding. People don't understand what to do. They get nervous. So with fear comes envy, jealousy. That's one of the biggest weaknesses in human art. It's like, no.
Yeah.
And fear will bring everything all around. So there's not much fear in this house.
In closing, what is the one thing that you would leave listeners with?
I always tell people that comes to me, hey, I want to open a restaurant. I said, do you want my help or you want to do it yourself? And they always say, oh, I want to open a restaurant, so I want to do it myself. I said, so put blinders on. Stop putting your blinders on. Drive towards your goal like a Kentucky Derby. Like, unless you get to that finish line, don't stop. And when that bus is running, he's not worried about rock pedals on the floor.
Yeah.
It's running. Start running. Run towards your goal. Put your blinders on.
I love it. Folks, get in contact with you.
You could go to 1207 Nostrand Avenue to Market Bar and Brewery. We brew our own beer. We got some good lager. some good IPA. I'm talking about, we built our own pizza. We got some ethnic pizza, like the Aaron pizza. We got the grill pizza, which is a pork pizza, like the Panean style pizza for our black folks. We try to use meat that we Caribbean people or black people eat and put it on pizza. Because nobody got to order pizza no more. We're doing that. Great sandwiches. I want people like more to come check out Where's My Plans. Come have fun with me in the kitchen in 1206 in North Shore, which is basically across the street from the brewery. And I know it's bold, pulling one business across from the other. But if you know what you're doing and got the right concept, you cannot tell another business not to open next to you. So it's better me than them.
That's right. You can always open your own business across the street from each other. That's strategy.
Yeah. You caught her in the market.
Absolutely. I love it. You are a great inspiration. What you have shared today, I'm sure, will definitely impact others.
Thank you. Thank you. The world impact me. This podcast will impact me too. Let's show love. Let's do work. If anybody need any help, shoot us an email on how to get started with your water. I'll be happy. Go on our website. Shoot me an email. I'll respond step by step in what to do, from taxes, from insurance that you need, state compliance. I'll help. Just to see another black business open right next to you. I don't care if it's another restaurant. Because then my street gonna known for great black restaurant.
That's right.
I don't see that competition. We gotta do better in our community.
We do.
Thank you for spending your time with us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Before you head out, we do have two events coming up. We have a virtual networking event as well as a high tea. Yes, honey, I said high tea. We will be networking in elegance, love. You can register for both events at joytutor.com. We would love to get social with you, so check us out and follow us, and we'll follow you back under the handles Joy Tutor Inc. or Joy Tutor. Until next time, take care.